This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Yo, welcome everybody to another edition of the Red Bastard Podcast. I'm that bastard himself, Jeff Ketchum, doing the bastardly stuff down in Austin, Texas on a day when it is, I shit you not, it's 106 degrees outside where I live, which makes watching the Premier League in July a fascinating concept, because I feel like I watch night games where people are definitely wearing jackets and I'm watching water breaks when it's like 75 degrees outside and it's 106 degrees in my location today, which is like 110 on the heat index, which is hot. Like, if you're asking me what does 106 feel like, I don't know, man. All I can tell you is at 100, like, I walk outside and the heat doesn't bother me. Like, I'll hear that it's 100 degrees and I will walk outside and it's just, you know, I'm used to it. I'm used to 100 degrees. 106 is mega hot. And when I walked outside today, like, really and truly at 106 levels for the first time, like, I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what the temperature was. I knew it was hot. I knew, well, this is different heat. 106 is a lot different than 100. I know it's triple digits, but that 6 degrees makes a hell of a huge difference. So forgive me for talking about the heat, but it is 106 today. And, like, I don't know. I guess I needed to talk about it. I got triggered. I have pushed this podcast off for basically 48 hours. It's been over 48 hours since Liverpool drew with Burnley on what was Saturday morning here in the USA, you know, middle of the day, 3 o'clock day, 3 o'clock game at Merseyside. It's a weird one. It's a weird one. And I don't know why this particular result. I think it speaks to the level of mental commitment as a fan that I'm still in with this team, that even though we've won the championship and I'm telling myself that it should be okay to celebrate a championship, this isn't the way I've ever won a championship before. I'm an American. We win all of our championships in the last game of the season. Then you party your butt off. Then you have the Champions League final last year was perfect. This is the last game. Let's party. The parade. Everything felt so natural. Winning a championship 7 games out is a bit of a strange thing. And so I've been holding on to the record and the records available as probably too significant of a thing. You know, by the end of Saturday, I found myself talking with my fellow Liverpool fans on Facebook, various texting, that kind of stuff. Orange Bloods. And I felt like I was suddenly talking people off the wall. It's like, well, look, worst case scenario, when this thing is over, Liverpool have its first championship in 30 years and only get to call itself one of the best teams in the history of the Premier League instead of definitively the best. Like, that potentially is what we're talking about here. And that's an amazing level of first world problems to be consumed with. Like, I just got finished watching Manchester United give up a last second goal against Southampton. Now they no longer control their destiny. Leicester City's been throwing up all over themselves. Chelsea, likewise. Three teams fighting for two spots. Everybody caving in under the pressure. And here we are, you know, a respectable draw against a good, decent side in Burnley. Like, really and truly, there's nothing wrong with the result. And it felt like I was bothered on Saturday. I was in a bad mood like all day Saturday. And even though I was giving people the speeches and telling my friends, like, perspective, I was still in a bad mood. I wanted 104. I definitely want 101. And beating Burnley put us in a position where, with three games remaining, we had some wiggle room. And now we have no wiggle room if we want the record. And, like, I have made that, like, a personal mission. But part of that is, like, it's a personal mission because the championship's already won. And it's just hard to – it's – you know, I've listened to various podcasts. This is also weird about this particular podcast that's different from a lot of the other ones that I do. I normally don't listen to other podcasts before I record my podcast because I don't want my vision, my thoughts clouded by the opinions and visions of others. For better or for worse, like, I want it to be me, authentically what my experience is. Otherwise, why do this podcast? But I listened and, you know, I've heard it all. Like, I don't know what else there is that I can say that hasn't already been said on a number of podcasts. We dominated Burnley. We did. Look, I do this thing with Liverpool games. I'm a bit of a jinx, and I'll tell you how big of a jinx I am. I do this thing where if I record Premier League games on my DVR, Liverpool doesn't play well. But if I just let it go, then they seem to play well. So I went into the game, and even though we're three games away from there being no football for a while, and I really should be DVRing all the games just so I can have them to watch whenever I need a fix, right? I, in the first half, did not have the game on record. But we got through the first half, and I was like, that was a damn good performance. That was good. Like, I don't know where to rank. That was in the top half of Liverpool performances this season. It kind of reminded me of watching Atletico Madrid, where you flat out dominate a game and it's only 1-0 and it doesn't feel like it should be, yet it is. And there's conversations to be had about, like, what it means that we're not scoring more, that we didn't win that game 4-0, 5-0. But, like, shit happens. I mean, that was one of the very first messages that clicked into my head on Saturday. As disappointed as I was, as much as I think I kind of went into a-hole mode a little bit, I didn't mean to. And I don't think I was that way all day long. But I'd be lying if I said I didn't have somewhat of a bad attitude, just in general, like a bad disposition on Saturday, and that the game didn't affect me in a way like that. Like, you shouldn't admit that that's the case, but I did. I kind of felt that way, and I can feel myself being a little crabby, a little short. We got to clean up this house. Like, you know, I went into strict discipline mode with my kids much, you know, quicker than I might have otherwise. And I think the thing that bothered me so much is that we did play so well. You know, I think back to the Aston Villa game just a couple of weeks ago. We didn't play nearly as well in that game, yet we win the game. What I think was so bothersome about Saturday was this wasn't Everton. This wasn't, you know, Man City or Watford. We played well. Someone else said this. I hate to steal their line, but I can't remember who it was. But for 65 minutes, Liverpool and Burnley played a different sport on Saturday. Burnley played some football. We played some advanced level of something that resembles football that only a very few teams in the world can pull off, and yet we only had a 1-0 lead for this exhibition of excellence. I really felt like that was a stellar performance for 45 minutes. And I'm not going to do the Nick Pope, you know, stood on his head. Like, he was all right. He was all right. But we hit the post. We missed wide open shots. Nobody in our vaunted front three put the ball in the back of the net. Like, yes, Pope robbed Sadio Mane late in the first half with a save that was memorable. But, you know, outside of that, that was way more about us than it was about him. So there are all these little frustrating things. We cannot get penalties that somehow we are a historically good champion, and yet when it comes to earning fouls that lead to penalty opportunities, like, we are a bottom 5 to 10 team in the league. That, you know, I watched Bruno Fernandes step on a guy and get the benefit of the doubt and excuse me, a penalty. And I watched Mo Salah get tackled in the penalty area. And it's like, oh, well, you know, it was just a tackle. Yeah, but no, he puts his arm around him and brings him to the, it was a tackle. Well, yeah, it was a baby tackle. You know, I realized that Andy Robertson play, that was clearly a foul. Like, I realize you hate to give a penalty on something like that. That wasn't even necessarily him in a goal creating situation. Was it a foul? Unmistakably, yes. Was it in the box? Unmistakably, yes. Them's the rules. But they don't get called. Like, there's that frustrating thing too. But my frustration throughout Saturday had less to do with the officiating crew. And it was bad. It was a totality of everything. It took a perfect storm. It took bad officiating, bad finishing, little bit of bad luck, one of them days, like all the cliches, you add them all up together, you get a perfect storm, and you end up drawing in a game that, you know, that all season long you've been winning. And I thought, well, that's how Man City has felt this season, because they've lost like 9 times. And in all of those games, for the most part, they were the better team. And then you look up at the scoreboard at some point, you're like, don't they have like 25 shots on target and they have one goal and they're losing 2? Like, Man City's had games like that. We have not. Saturday was one of those games. We were unmistakably better than Burnley. They got a point out of us. We dropped 2 points. Shit happens in football. One of the very first things I told a friend of mine in the UK is, this is what happens, man, when you watch a game where when you score, it only counts for 1 point. I watch other sports where, like, if that had been an American football game, by the time Burnley would have got on the board, that was like about a 15-0 game in American football. What basically happened was that we kept moving the ball up and down the field and getting it into the red zone, and we couldn't score touchdowns. But it scored a touchdown. And then we were left with a bunch of field goal opportunities. Like, in American football, that's a 3-score game when you're that dominant, even when you're not playing well. You have to go out of your way in American football to dominate as much as Liverpool dominated Burnley and to only like be up by a score. Yeah, turnovers, and we weren't doing that. I guess we had the equivalent of missed field goals. But that was like the equivalent of missing a bunch of 25-yard field goals. Like, there's some of those we should have made. Some of those were like wide right, badly. So it was this perfect storm of stuff. And I just, you know, even though, but I felt bad about it. And that is just one of the weird little conundrums that we're going to have with this team for the remaining 3 games of the season. Like, we are so desperate, so thirsty for the all-time great parts that it does cause us to lose a little wee bit of perspective. This is a team already with 90-plus points. Very few teams in the history of the Premier League have ever done that. The Invincibles did not do that. No Manchester United team has ever scored as many points in a season as Liverpool have so far this season. It's amazing. But more. We want more. The possibilities for more. We came up short for what it was possible. Disappointment. It's just weird. Almost certainly, we'll never be in this position again. I'll take it. It's better than not. I'll take these, like the Guard of Honors. I wish the stadiums were full. I love those. Can we do those? We should get 7 Guard of Honors next year to make up for the Guard of Honors that we've kind of lost this year. Other things related to Liverpool football, you know, just from some player thoughts. You know, from the front three, I don't know what to say. None of them were better than a 7 at best on Saturday, and that's problematic. If you tell me in any given game Salah's a 6.5. Mane's a 6.5. Firmino's a 6. No, maybe on your best day, you could argue a 7. Maybe. But certainly not an 8. If you tell me that all three of those guys in any given week aren't hitting a 7, definitely not hitting an 8. Yeah, man. That feels like a draw. That feels like we may have only scored a goal. If we've scored 2, you know, I guess Virgil got his head on the end of one. One of the midfielders scored 1. But, you know, it doesn't feel like us in a blowout if you're telling me that our front three are going to perform at that level. And I'm not going to make too much out of it at this point. My thoughts on Bobby Firmino have already been established. I'm not going to pile on. I love Bobby. I just wonder if we're at a stage with him. And what does it mean to be at that stage where for the very first time we have to ask questions about is he the guy? And I think he is. I still think he's too valuable. But on days when Salah and Mane don't play well, aren't anywhere remotely close to their peak, not having a Bobby Firmino that scores at home this season sticks out like a sore thumb. And it hasn't because we'd previously won every other game. So we haven't come out of any other home game this season saying, what the hell's up with Bobby? Can't get a goal out of him. But in a game where you don't score but one off an amazing header from your left back, like you say things like, how come our striker didn't score or doesn't score? I thought Curtis Jones was, I'm going to keep it a buck. He was all right. He missed some opportunities that he should have cashed in. That being said, he did get himself into opportunities where he could have cashed in. You're damned if you do, damned if you don't, when you don't score, but he was in good spots. He wasn't our problem. He wasn't great. Like it's one of these, like, if we're using the he's a teenager scale to grade, so we're grading with a curve, he was fantastic. Did nothing to harm the idea that he should play more. If we're grading on like, well, Liverpool's arguably the best team in the world, so the standard is that high, he was all right. He wasn't world-class. He wasn't great. He wasn't very good. He was okay. And that's why he has to get reps, because that's how he goes from being okay to better than that. We've seen that with Phil Foden at Man City. Like, it takes getting into games. And eventually the payoff comes. So Liverpool invested a little bit into its future by putting Curtis Jones on the field against Burnley, but it did not result in anything good other than that kid got some investment time. But it did make us better. We didn't score more goals because of his presence on the field. Like, he was okay. But we can't sit here and say that performance was a game. It wasn't a game changer. It was a good first step for him. And that's okay. That's like, there's nothing wrong with that being, if you'd have told me going into the game, forget about everybody else, you're going to get like a 6.5 out of Curtis Jones, and a 6.5 that could have been an 8 if, you know, he's on target. Little more composure, and that 6.5 becomes an 8, and we're having a completely different conversation. But he didn't, because we don't give out 8s like they're Pez dispensers. And I have a hard time giving out 7s, even in the front three, as good as and they created opportunities. I think Mo Salah had 4 shots on goal, 4 shots on target in the game. So you could make a case that anytime someone up front gets 4 shots on target, that's a 7. But I mean, I'm giving Mo a hard time. Like, I'm not giving Mo an automatic 7, despite even that stat. Because the standards are high around here. When I give someone a 7, that means they played really, really good. When they played 8, that means they played great. When they make a 9, they played otherworldly, and 10's godlike. So I thought Curtis Jones was okay. I was disappointed with the lineup. It's clear to me that, you know, he's saving Naby Keita's legs a little bit, but I thought Naby was a guy that we needed. I don't know. We're having a really interesting a real interesting thing is happening towards the end of the season that I think is going to prove to be one of Klopp's big headaches potentially going into next season. And that is Fabinho is locked in. And as far as I'm concerned, Jordan Henderson is locked in. When Jordan Henderson plays in the Premier League with Liverpool this season, Liverpool's winning percentage is like 90%. When he's out and not playing, Liverpool's winning percentage drops 30 points to 60%. It's the difference between historic and really, really good. So Jordan Henderson's role is on this team is locked up. So to me, this is, we go into next year and we talk about what is our best midfield. To me, this comes into a Genie versus Naby Keita conversation. That Fabinho and Jordan can be your holding midfielders. But so can the great thing about Naby and the great thing about Jordan is that depending on what's happening, they're interchangeable in ways that they can both be holding midfielders and they can both attack and they can both fill in gaps and cover each other. Now, Genie Wijnaldum is like the Spider-Man of this team. He's everywhere when the team needs him to be. In all those areas covering for people, that's kind of what he does. But it felt like Saturday that this team missed Naby Keita driving and creating. And it just, that game was too wide open for me to believe that Naby Keita inside of it would not have created a goal scoring opportunity for somebody on his team, either through the press, either through, you know, just dribbling and creating. And even if it means getting a hockey assist, right? He's the guy that sets up the guy that sets up the guy. Naby Keita's fingerprints, I think, would have been in that game, on that game, the way that he's, the form that he's been in. And I thought it missed him. And I know why. I know, I can see where Klopp says, I can't have Keita. I can't not have, there's no Hendo. And I'm going to have Keita and Curtis Jones on the pitch at the same time against Burnley. Like, that feels too tricky. Like, that's on Naby. And that, he hasn't proven himself to be so steady that putting him on the pitch with a teenager isn't somewhat scary in the manager's estimations. Otherwise, he would have done it. And when we go into next year, Klopp, I think, has to like make we got to decide who we're going to be in the midfield. When we're playing the best teams on the schedule, what's our big game lineup? And for this season, we know what it is. When Henderson's healthy, it's Fabinho, it's Hendo, and it's Genie. What it is next year, I'm not so certain. I just know that on Saturday, this team needed a lot of what Naby Keita offered. And while I'm sure Genie had a very Genie performance, like how many gaps needed to be filled in a performance when you're 75% possession? How much did he have to do? How much covering and protecting did he have to do that couldn't have been done by other people? Because we did need some offense. We did need some creativity. We did need some penetration that didn't otherwise exist to help pick that lock to get us from 1-0 to 2-0. And at that point, maybe the floodgates open up. It never happened. Naby Keita gives us a better chance of opening the floodgates week in and week out, I think, than Genie does. But, like, I'm a Genie guy. Like, look, it's a tough one. I don't know how Klopp leaves any of those guys out. I just know that I found myself really aching for Naby to get into the game, even before he did. I wanted him to come on at halftime. Okay, well, Curtis Jones got a really decent 45 in. Let's put the grown up. Let's play with three adults. It's an adult game. I want 104. So, but we'll almost certainly get if we didn't get Naby on Saturday, we'll get him against Arsenal. Fabinho's recently had a rest. To me, he's locked in. I think Genie, unless Milner is an option. And I don't know. I don't know if, can they get 60 out of Milner and then you bring in Genie for that final 30? Or are you better having Genie go 60 and if you got Milner, have him come in and do 30? The latter feels more likely, that Milner could come in after missing the weekend and play 30 instead of 60. Plus, that would allow him to be the grown-up towards the end of the game. So, you know, I think you're almost certainly looking at a Fabinho, Genie, Keita midfield. the back four is the back four. Everybody's had a rest except for the center backs. They ain't getting rests. I think they're going to go out and try to win that game. Then they have a week off before they have to play Chelsea. I think you'll see the full team again in that game as they lift the championship and play their final game at Anfield. And it sucks. We didn't get that record. I think we all wanted that one, right? 19 games, 19 wins. Okay. It's got to be 18 out of 19 with a draw. That's the way it works. We're going to have to make do with that. It's pretty historic stuff. Nonetheless, what to make do with it? Basically better than anybody in the history of the Premier League, in the modern day history, has ever done. We didn't beat some record that's existed since the 1800s, back when they played like 9 games. So, you know, again, these are first world football problems that we're talking about that are shifting our moods. Final Liverpool thought in today's podcast is simply, I'm fascinated at Takumi Minamino's lack of involvement. That there have been Klopp doesn't trust him yet. Like, that is obvious. The question is, you know, we know that there's a bedding in process that takes time. At what point do you say, okay, well, there's an issue here? Because it's one thing to come in January, in the middle of the season, and you're trying to acclimate yourself on the fly. And then it's another thing to basically get a preseason training camp like he had coming off of the break, and to come back in and not be factoring into, you know, he gets Everton and, you know, used out wide. I thought he played okay, considering I don't think that's his best position. And yet we haven't seen him since. We've seen Klopp go to Origi in a starting lineup when Firmino is out, instead of going to Minamino. He doesn't really come, you know, he doesn't come in this past weekend when they need a goal, when they need offense. I don't know. Because it's an issue, because Minamino is a purchase that, when you say, hey, we're not going to do anything this summer in buying an attacker, you're pointing towards Minamino and saying, but we did make this really smart purchase in December and nobody's talking about it, but it only cost $8 million. Well, that's awesome if he's actually playing. But if he can't get into the side and Klopp doesn't trust him, then they didn't buy what it is that they're claiming back in December to have bought. This isn't an integral piece of the puzzle that you know, in the future, like that is unproven at this point that he's a piece of the puzzle. And I want him to be. I want to be a big Minamino fan. I do. I want to root for him for like the next 5 years. But it remains to be seen, like, in what capacity I'm going to be able to root for him. He has not kicked the door down. Klopp is not holding it extra open for him, and like, it's noticeable. I don't know what it means, but the questions warrant being asked. And like, you know, just for the record, these are things that we were talking about before the end of this season. So if we get into next season and some of the same themes exist, we can't play that thing where we play dumb and act like they weren't already happening and we weren't already talking about it. It's just something to keep an eye on. And beyond that, like, I wouldn't make too big of a deal out of it, but it's worth talking about. It's worth mentioning. It's worth mentioning that we needed a goal over the weekend, and that Takumi Minamino wasn't a go-to at that point, because we are now 7 months into his tenure at Anfield, and I think they would have said back in December that 7 months in, yeah, we would expect some contributions for our guy, and they have not yet seemingly figured out how to get the kind of contributions out of him that lead to him getting on the field. No, JS. Anyway, I don't really have it in me to talk about the Man City thing. Like, there are no rules. I mean, UEFA, Man City, that is such a disgrace. Such a disgrace. I'm just going to call it a disgrace and move on. But it does make the end run of this Premier League season really interesting for those top four spots, because if the top five make it in, this thing's pretty cut and dry. With four now getting in, and Leicester and Chelsea controlling their fates, and Manchester United now needing them to trip up and knowing that those clubs are probably going to trip up. So can Manchester United go through this thing without tripping up? Fascinating. Fascinating. Feels like if you're Liverpool, you're rooting for Leicester to do the damn thing so that either Chelsea gets left out and they don't get Kai Havertz, or United gets left out and that, well, that would just be funny. Considering all of the recent United smack that's been talked, the idea that now the top five don't get in, only the top four get in, and United could have been third after today, but they let a late last-second goal in, and now they're fifth. I think they're going to get in. I think Leicester is going to have a hard time holding on. They are a team on fumes. But, oh, it's fun to dream. It's fun to dream. There's a part of me that thinks the best thing that could happen is that Chelsea misses out because then Kai Havertz isn't coming to Chelsea. Manchester United will spend whatever Manchester United is going to spend, and they could still get in by winning the Europa League. But Chelsea not getting in would mean no Kai Havertz. It would mean Chelsea in Europe, but in the Europa League, and it would just make the project that they're building there a little bit less real in terms of the types of players that would suddenly be realistically available for them. I don't know that the sky is the limit if you're playing in the Europa League next year instead of the Champions League. Just ask Man City. Anyway, that is it for today's edition of The Bastard. Thank you for listening. We will do a wrap-up show after the Arsenal game. Let's get back on the winning track. Let's get a W. Let's get three more points. So that we need, what, I guess at that point, we need three wins. Three more wins. Let's get the damn record. Let's get ready for next season. Let's have some fun with it. Let's have some smiles. Let's not be assholes. Until next time. Later.